Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, heroes, monsters, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them, and religion and mythology more generally, in your fantasy role-playing games. You know, all these episodes, 40 whatever it is now, I never look up the number until I'm saving the file, that I've been doing this show, and it never occurred to me that that introduction's really weird, right? Like, you know who I am, you kind of have to, since, by definition, if you listen to Patron Deities, you also listen to Monster Man. Like, you don't think I'm a different person. Anyway, that's not important. What is important is that today's episode concentrates on two deities from the Central American Mythos section of the Deities and Demigods book. Specifically, we're talking about two Aztec deities, Tezcatlipoca, described here as the god of the sun, although I'm not so convinced about that identification, and Tlaloc, the rain god. Now, these two are both very heavy hitters within the Aztec or Mexica pantheon. Tezcatlipoca and Tlaloc are kind of among the primordial gods of the Aztec cosmology. As we've mentioned previously, the Aztecs believed that our world was what is called the fifth sun. That is to say, there had been four previous worlds that had existed and that they had each been destroyed in a series of calamities, and that it was only acts of sacrifice that helped keep the world of the fifth sun from succumbing to a similar calamity. Now, four deities are responsible for these four previous suns, and those are Quetzalcoatl, Tezcatlipoca, Tlaloc, and Chalchiutlicue. Now, we've talked about Chalchiutlicue and Quetzalcoatl already, so really we're getting two of kind of the four major deities, at least cosmologically speaking, in today's episode. Tezcatlipoca is an interesting and complex character, and some aspects of that complexity can be seen in Deities and Demigods, but I feel like Deities and Demigods tries to simplify him to fit into more comprehensible divine roles. And that's something that we've seen not just in the Central American mythos, but also in other sections of Deities and Demigods, and I understand why they do it. It makes sense from a gaming perspective because, you know, this isn't some kind of comparative religion class. Our purpose isn't to fully understand Aztec religion, thank goodness. It's to take inspiration from it for things that we can include in our games. But I think that one of the most interesting things about Tezcatlipoca is that he's not exactly any of the things that you would sort of want him to be. He's a complex character, and he may indeed be more than one character. So, for example, we know that there is a form of Tezcatlipoca called the Blue Tezcatlipoca, which is also Huitzilopochtli. So Tezcatlipoca is described, I mentioned, as a sun god. We'll get to that in a second. And he's also described as a rival to Quetzalcoatl. And that's sort of true, I suppose. It's definitely the case that Tezcatlipoca was a sun in one of the previous suns. I think he was the first sun. And Quetzalcoatl, angered for some reason, knocked him out of the sky, whereupon Tezcatlipoca turned into a jaguar, which is his sacred animal, and devoured the world. And there are other examples in the mythology of Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca being presented as opponents. But I don't know that we can go so far as to say what Deities and Demigods says, which is that Tezcatlipoca is therefore associated with betrayal. I feel like that's not correct. In fact, Tezcatlipoca is pretty strongly associated with rulership. In her book, The Aztecs and Interpretation, Inga Clendinen suggests that Tezcatlipoca was very closely associated with the royal authority of the rulers of Tenochtitlan, and that in fact, you know, that authority was not something that proceeded from the person of the emperor, but was more like a kind of divine indwelling in them that was associated with Tezcatlipoca. You know, we've seen that Quetzalcoatl is more of a cosmic deity, and, you know, if you have a social cultural deity, it's more likely to be someone like Huitzilopochtli. But also, it could be Tezcatlipoca. Among other things, he's described as the god of jaguars, the god of obsidian, the god of the night sky, the god of the earth. Elisenda Villaleonch, in her book that accompanied the Moctezuma and the Aztecs exhibit at the British Museum, says that he was the god of war, destiny, sorcery, divination, and night. And he has a whole bunch of different titles and attributes. My favorite one is Necoc-Yautl, the enemy of both sides, which is a fantastic name for a deity. The enemy of both sides. That's very evocative. In his book, Everyday Life of the Aztecs, Warwick Bray calls him invisible, quote, like the darkness, like the mind. I don't know where that's a quote from, but it's still pretty great. Tezcatlipoca played an important role, as we said before, in the creation of the world. He lost his right foot in battle against a monster. He sort of used it as a lure to lure this creature, who then bit it off. So he is sometimes depicted with something else in place of his right foot. That something could be a snake. It could be a mirror. Mirrors in Aztec society were made of obsidian, and Tezcatlipoca, as a god of obsidian, and of course associated with the color black, his name literally means, or could mean, actually, it's not 100% certain, smoking mirror. And this may refer to the idea that obsidian mirrors are used for scrying, are used for foretelling the future. So Tezcatlipoca's equivalent in Maya cosmology is not clear. He may be associated with the god Tohil, who also appears in the Popol Vuh, although not really in the part that we read, but Tohil may also be a form of Kukulkan or Kukumats, which is more or less the Maya equivalent of Quetzalcoatl. So there's some evidence that, as we've seen with other cultural contact between the Valley of Mexico and the Yucatan region, there may have been religious practices within Mexica or Aztec society that influenced how particular cults developed within Maya culture. So maybe this Tohil guy is connected to Tezcatlipoca. He doesn't have all of the attributes of Tezcatlipoca. Like other Aztec deities, Tezcatlipoca did receive human sacrifice. I say receive human sacrifice. In fact, he was the victim of a human sacrifice rite. So there is a particular ritual where a captured warrior becomes Tezcatlipoca for 1 year. And for this 1 year, he is treated like he's a god by everyone in Tenochtitlan. You know, he's given the best food, he lives in a nice house, he has a whole fancy outfit, he has to dress up like Tezcatlipoca. You know, he lives the life of a divine being, and then at the end of it, he returns to his old self and is sacrificed. So there, I think that definitely the idea is that Tezcatlipoca is undergoing this act of sacrifice. So Tezcatlipoca sounds like the god that a more complex, that's not fair, but like a more morally complex cleric or paladin might worship, right? Because Tezcatlipoca, when you come right down to it, ultimately is probably on the side of the angels. He's a rival of Quetzalcoatl, if not necessarily an enemy, and he is worshipped, and in particular worshipped by sort of the aristocratic class. That reminds me a little bit in that respect of Odin, who is this sneaky, devious manipulator, master strategist, a trickster, a master of disguise, and a war god in a culture that was pretty upfront about what a brutal and wasteful business war could be. So Tezcatlipoca is quite a dark deity, but he is understood as a cosmological necessity despite those qualities. And you can definitely see that he would be worshipped by clerics who would depend on him for his wisdom. I feel like the illustration of Tezcatlipoca in the Deities and Demigods book, which depicts a jaguar, pacing by a pool with its dark reflection in the water beneath, is actually a really good one. You know, we've seen the image of this hunting cat appear in both Aztec and Maya symbology before, and I suspect we'll see it again. Well, in fact, I know we'll see it again because Tlaloc is also sometimes associated with this creature. And in a little bit in the same way that images of lions and wolves keep reappearing in European symbology, particularly, I think lions are a particularly instructive case here, because medieval and post-medieval Europeans loved the symbols of lions, even if lions themselves were extremely rare. You know, there are not a lot of lions in Scotland. You know, I don't know what jaguar populations were like, but I think you're much more likely to run into one of them than a contemporary European would be to run into a lion or even a wolf. The sun god thing. I said that I don't quite see how Tezcatlipoca is a sun god. I think this may, I mean, obviously he is briefly a sun god in the myth of the five suns, and I think it may be to do with the connection between him and a Maya equivalent, either Tohil or another character called God K. They might have a bigger claim to being a sun god. And it is in a Maya context that Tezcatlipoca is described as a sun god in Deities and Demigods. I think is the idea that he's the father of Itzamna, the healer god. Anyway, Tezcatlipoca's servants would be wise and have visions of the future and maybe be prepared to be ruthless in carrying out the actions that were necessary to bring that future into being. I think a cleric of Tezcatlipoca, or even just, you know, a member of another class who worships Tezcatlipoca, or a society that has mythological space for a deity like Tezcatlipoca, could be quite interesting. You know, one thing that doesn't come up in a lot of fantasy religions is the idea of propitiatory worship, that there were certainly deities in many polytheistic religions that are seen as great but not good. Like, we're going to venerate this being, we're going to make offerings to it, we're going to maybe even sing hymns about it, not because we think that it's so wonderful, but because we want to make sure that it doesn't get angry with us. Tezcatlipoca, you know, you might not want to get involved in Tezcatlipoca's schemes, but you can't ignore him. So I think there's a lot to be said for Tezcatlipoca or a Tezcatlipoca-inspired deity in a fantasy game. And I think of all the Aztec deities, Tezcatlipoca is probably second only to Quetzalcoatl in terms of name recognition among people who don't really know anything about Mesoamerican religion. Certainly better known than, like, Chalchutlique. Speaking of Chalchutlique, our next deity is Chalchutlique's husband, Tlaloc, the god of the rain. We talked before about the idea that Chalchutlique is the deity of groundwater, of rivers and streams, pools and what have you, whereas Tlaloc is the god of rain. And as the god of rain, of water that falls from the heavens, he is a vital deity in an agrarian society, and he is both loved and feared. You know, it's said that there are many types of rain, and only one of them nourishes the crops. All the other ones are dangerous. And that's quite right. You know, Tlaloc's power to send rain from the heavens can create, you know, healthy crops that'll help support society, or it can create destructive downpours that will destroy those same crops. So Tlaloc is both worshipped and feared. Elisenda Villalionch suggests that Tlaloc... So in Tenochtitlan, Tlaloc was worshipped alongside Huitzilopochtli. And if you remember Huitzilopochtli's story, Huitzilopochtli is the sort of tribal god of the wandering Aztecs. You know, as when they came from Aztlan to Tenochtitlan, they were guided there by Huitzilopochtli. And Elisenda Villalionch suggests that the dual worship of Huitzilopochtli and Tlaloc is basically a recognition of kind of the dual nature of Aztec society, that on the one hand, we have this nomadic people, these exiles, who've come from their, you know, legendary lost homeland and settled in the Valley of Mexico, but also, and, you know, and that journey is represented by the worship of Huitzilopochtli, and then at the same time, Tlaloc represents the life of settled agrarian farmers. You know, he may have been the most popular deity among the people who were already in the Valley of Mexico when the Aztecs arrived, and naturally would reflect that their lifestyle was now similar to those people. And we know that Tlaloc is extensively worshipped in the pre-Aztec period. You know, the major shrine to Tlaloc is located at Teotihuacan, and Teotihuacan was an important cultural center long before the Aztec Empire. I mentioned before that Tlaloc has his own heaven. So we talked about how, you know, most people, when they die, go to Mictlan. There are possible other fates for people who die in battle or who die in childbirth. They become companions of the sun and also weird crossroads monsters. So I don't know about that part. But the other place you can wind up going when you die is Tlalocan. And so Tlalocan is the land of Tlaloc. It's in the heavens, and it's a verdant, watery paradise, much like you might expect from a place ruled by the rain god. You know, it's full of life-giving vegetation, and it's really nice. And basically, people go there if they died either in like a watery context in some way, or like, you know, if they drowned or whatever, or from a number of diseases that were believed to be associated with water and with Tlaloc. He may be related to a Maya god called Chak, and, you know, there is this tendency, and this is actually something that historians of Mesoamerica are trying to be alert to, which is that lots and lots of deities get identified as Tlaloc. In fact, I said that Tlaloc was worshipped at Teotihuacan, but I'm not sure that we know that that deity was called Tlaloc. We've just decided to associate the Mexica god Tlaloc with this Teotihuacan deity who has similar attributes. You know, Tlaloc is very visually recognizable. He's usually presented with kind of goggle eyes, and the almost like staring eyes that almost, the way that they're carved, look like he's wearing goggles. And often he has the fangs of a jaguar, which again may just be a symbol of his divine power. So some accounts of religion in Mesoamerican cultures have been criticized for a tendency to over-identify any deity that's a little bit similar to Tlaloc with Tlaloc. Obviously, I can't comment on that, but that is definitely something that people have said. Now, while Tlaloc does not have Tezcatlipoca's fearsome aspect, he too is worshipped with human sacrifice, particularly on his sacred mountain, Mount Tlaloc, which is on the eastern side of the Valley of Mexico. So, again, this is just more indication that it was these acts of sacrifice that were believed to keep the cosmic cycle functioning. And, you know, those were sometimes the sacrifices of prisoners, but also sometimes of members of noble households, you know, that this sense that we haven't mentioned self-sacrifice, but self-sacrifice is an important aspect of the Aztec sacrificial culture. The emperor, the Tlatoani, would constantly engage in these acts of ritual self-sacrifice, of bloodletting himself, wounding himself with thorns, with knives, with a stingray's spine, and all sorts of other stuff. The idea being that, you know, since it was divine sacrifice that helped keep the universe going, both the cosmic cycle and the cycle of this world, and since, you know, Tlaloc was an integral part of that cycle, then Tlaloc too is worshipped with sacrifice. It's just such a fundamental part of the Aztec or Mexica view of the cosmology, right? That the universe is not something that just keeps going. It's something that has to be continually maintained, continually recharged, if you like. And I think, you know, when we talked about human sacrifice last time, I got a lot of really good comments. People were understandably very uncomfortable about including those types of elements in their fantasy role-playing game, particularly in a culture that's meant to be portrayed as, you know, sympathetic or neutral. You start putting in that these guys have mass human sacrifices, and most players are going to respond by going, well, I see, the bad guys is what you're saying. And if you're not trying to portray them as the bad guys, but you still want to keep that element, I think you have to adopt this notion of self-sacrifice. That these guys think that regular recharging is necessary for the health of the cosmos. They just don't happen to think that they don't share the Aztec view that charging comes about by, you know, cutting people's hearts out. I think that's how you can maybe kind of square that circle, at least a little bit. Anyway, I think Tlaloc is most interesting in that sense, you know, this idea that there is some kind of ritual thing that has to be accomplished in order that the rains will come, right? Something upon which the survival of the whole community, or at least the prosperity of the community, depends. And that, I think, is a good way to put the onus on player characters to do something, right? So, I mean, you want to take out human sacrifice, you just say, oh, well, you know, every year at the Great Festival of Tlaloc, we have to, you know, conduct this ritual. Only the blue jewel has been stolen, and you now have to go and get it back and bring it here before the feast day, or else Tlaloc will be offended and he won't deliver the rain. And that's pretty much what his entry in Deities and Demigods is all about, is Tlaloc's unwillingness to deliver the rain if he's unhappy with people. Okay, those are Tezcatlipoca and Tlaloc, two of the most important gods in Aztec mythology. And that leaves us with just two more deities in this section. Tlazolteotl, the goddess of vice, and I think a goddess of pulque, which we'll talk about next time. And Xochipitli, another good time deity. So we're going to have a lot to talk about with these two, at least I hope so. But after that, we're going to have to start a new season. So I'm going to go ahead. We'll probably take a one-episode break for me to talk about something unrelated, and then we'll go into a proper new season. So be on the lookout for a poll open to all my Patreon backers about what the next season's gonna be. Until then, this has been Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.